Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2018. And I'm now here with a representative from Det Fria Sverige, which is a Swedish political organization. And well, why don't you describe it to people, Dan? Welcome to Millennial.
Thank you very much. Well, it's a political association. We are not a political party, and we were launched last year in November 25th. So it's a fairly young organization, but we already have almost 1,400 members, which make us the biggest nationalist organization in Sweden in modern history. So we have really two big goals. One is to be an association for Swedes who try to take part in the media and to speak up for Swedes in Sweden and also abroad. But also our other main goal is to build more or less a parallel society within Sweden. We have made an analysis of the situation. I'm for myself, I've been active in the Swedish nationalist opposition for soon 20 years, or 18 to be more exact. And I have seen parties and organizations come and go. I've seen big demonstrations, small demonstrations, young people spending hundreds of hours handing out leaflets, all these kind of things. But never have I seen anything that has lasted more than a few years. So what we started with was some crowdfunding to buy some real estate to start really building this alternative society, not just online, but also in the physical world. And we already bought our first real estate, which is a big meeting hall with offices, and we will also build a gym and a cafe in there. And yeah, so we're already getting started, but the idea is to bring more nationalist Swedes to this area and start building the kind of society that we want to see within the state of today.
So, are you hoping to get to buy up ever more land next to this, the land that you currently have, or are you, is it going to be dotted all over Sweden?
Both. So the first real estate that we have bought is a really big place, and that will be also our headquarters. So of course we hope to expand in this area, but also we don't believe that all our members or sympathizers will move to this area. Maybe a few will, but mainly we want to recruit new people in the area. So we want to open houses like this, but maybe a smaller versions all around Sweden, to build really, like, it's not the best word to use today, but safe spaces for Swedes.
No, I think it's increasing. Yeah, I know what you mean exactly. And but the fact is that increasingly we on the right do need safe spaces. And it shouldn't be that embarrassing a thing because after all, our countries used to be our safe spaces. The fact that we now need a safe space within Sweden is because Sweden itself is no longer a safe space for the Swedes.
Right. No, and I mean, in Sweden we have a lot of ethnic organizations. I think it's the same in all European countries, who advocate the interests of particular ethnic group. But there is in Sweden none for the Swedes. There are a few political parties, a few activist organizations, and so on. But we try to, I mean, we don't want Swedes to become a minority in Sweden, but we also have to face the facts that it looks like that's going to happen. We will become a minority in Sweden, but we will be the largest minority for a long, long time. But we need to stop thinking of the state of today, the state of Sweden, as some kind of representatives of our people. They are not. So we need to build this parallel structure to advocate for Swedish people on another level and start not maybe acting like the minorities of today, but start to think about ourselves like one ethnic group within the state. I mean, we don't want it to be like that, but that's the reality. And instead of just crying about how it is, we have to look at how it is and try to adapt and come up with new strategies and try to face it.
See, that's very interesting. It reminds me at Erkenbrand, the Erkenbrand conference this year, Frode Midjord of the Skanza Forum, which is, does conference days around Sweden, Norway, and Denmark. He gave a speech about a sort of concept that he called the Great White Strike, which was the notion of white people realizing that in each country, in each of their countries, everything that's going on, the mass immigration, the multiculturalism, the feminism, the diversity, the Islamification, and so on, everything that's going on depends on their tax money. And so his concept of the Great White Strike was the idea of white people realizing that everything depended on them, and if they just stopped contributing for a few days each year, then that would give them their own sense of agency. But it would also disrupt the activities of the state, which at this point is against them, is working against them. But I mean, that it's just an idea. It's like a concept. But it seems that you are talking about actually doing that for real. It sounds like you're talking about Swedish people actually detaching themselves from Swedish society and joining a separate society. Is that accurate?
Right. I mean, in the long run, yes. This is nothing that can be done overnight. And this has also been something very important for us from the beginning, to not promise any quick fixes, not saying that we will have a revolution within a few years. I mean, I've been in parties where we said, okay, we will be in the parliament next election, and after that we will have the majority of the votes. And you know, you get a lot of young people pumped up and they believe in this, and then comes the election result and they are really disappointed and they don't know what to do after that.
Of course, they've set themselves up for failure and disappointment. This is a dreadful tendency among nationalists, I think, is to, they want results right now, and then of course when those results don't come, they're depressed.
Hmm. Right. And this is one of our main points. And we talk about this in a perspective of many generations. You know, I want to give something to my children that they can carry on. You know, it's like, as I said, I've spent 18 years in this opposition. I've worked a lot with different projects and so on. But really, before the Fria Sverige, I couldn't tell my son or my daughter, you know, that I had anything to pass on to them. Yes, a book or two, but that's it. But if we buy up real estate and land and we try to build these networks and parallel society, I can give this to my children and be proud and say, you can carry on the torch. And of course, this is not what most people want to hear, because we say that the big changes that will be positive for us, they will probably not come even in our lifetime. Maybe they will. I hope so, but I can't promise that. But we can already today try to build a foundation for something that will last for centuries and give our children and grandchildren a better start to continue this struggle that we are part of.
Right. Okay. I mean, obviously, there are lots of questions that arise from this. But at this point, I want to just tell the audience that I do have a co-host for this, which is my friend Kudu, who has been on the Millennial Voice channel for 3 years at least. I think we've known each other for about 3 years now.
It's been a while.
Yes. So do you want to introduce yourself briefly to the audience just so that people know why you're on this Hangout?
So I'm co-hosting with Woz, as he already said. I'm one of the mods of the community, so I'm sure at least some of you know me through the text chats. You know that I'm Swedish and have lived in America for quite some time, which is why I have this accent. So I just had some questions. You know, we want to get into what Day at Fria Sverige is really about. And Dan already did fantastic explaining, you know, needing this infrastructure to maintain a Swedish element to Sweden, which is just something that's so terribly sad to say. And while he was talking, Dan, you know, I had a question. You know, you mentioned gyms and cafes. Are there going to be services for the younger group, for children, for, you know, a lot of nationalist Swedes do have kids?
Yes, it will. I mean, this was actually one of the main topics in the media a few months ago. when it was official that we had bought the first house, because we had then already talked about building a playground and so on the land, because we try to have a family focus. I know that many who have visited our gatherings and events, especially foreign guests, they are really surprised that there are so many children there. But this is, of course, also important. I mean, if we're talking about building a parallel society, it can't be without children. For the children, there's mainly the playground that we are building next year outside the headquarters. And we will also have a large library in the headquarters. People are donating books. Also, different publishing houses are also donating books. So we are getting a really huge library right now. And there we will have a children's book section, which will not be neither censored or politically correct, you know, with like, Janine has two fathers or something like that. So we try to also think about the small ones.
Right. James, do you want to take that up?
Yeah, that was wonderful. That was that made me happy to hear. And I think that reassures a lot of not just Swedes, but a lot of people who look at Sweden from the outside and they see how things are and they worry about the country and they worry about the Swedes. And I think that does a lot to reassure people. I had no idea that there was so much exterior contribution in terms of things like the library. So that makes me very happy. What else do you guys have going? Do you have any other partnerships with other groups? Is there a lot of exterior support other than monetary support?
Well, the man taking care of the gym and designing it right now and who will be responsible for it is the golden one, Marcus Folin. I think he's known to a lot of YouTube watchers. So otherwise, we are mostly doing this by ourselves, but I mean, we are now 1,400 members almost. I was really happy to see a few weeks ago, almost a month ago, we started renovating the house. And we just asked in our internal members chat if somebody could come for the weekend and help. And we had, after 25 people said yes, we had to say no. We don't have sleeping places. We don't have enough things to do in the house right now. And people were just happy to contribute and to donate their time and their sweat to make this a reality. And that made me really happy, because internet is one thing, donating money is one thing, but also to take the car and go 3-4 hours to a house and work for 3 days in a row is I'm really, really impressed by our members.
How many people can be accommodated in the house? Did you say 25?
That was 25 people who could work at the same time with the renovation. Right now we are waiting for, there's a lot of bureaucracy around it. In Sweden, up to 150 people is no problem. Then it's really easy to get the permit. Above 150 people, there's a lot of about emergency exits and other stuff that has to be controlled by the state, but we are hoping to get it for at least 450 or 500 people, because it's 900 square meters. The meeting hall is 450 square meters, and normally you could get one person per square meter in your permit.
I see. And so you said 1,400 members. How long has the organization existed?
1 year and a few weeks. So we launched it November 25th last year. So that's
very impressive growth in 1 year.
Yeah, and we were shocked. You know, we had a live press conference on YouTube when we launched, and we had 500 members within the first 24 hours. So it was an amazing start, and we've been continue growing. And after we bought the first house in early October this year, it again, you know, started, and then people saw that we were not just talking. We are really doing this. And since then, I think since 1st of October, we have 350 new members.
That's fantastic. Do you think that this is something that, you tell me, what kind of people are involved? What kind of people were among those first 500? What parts of society do they come from?
That's also really interesting because, as I said, I've been active in a few other organizations and political parties, and the nationalist opposition is a pretty small crowd. I mean, a few, maybe 1,000 activists or something like that in Sweden. And you know most of them by name, or you can recognize the name at least. You have seen it before in some memberships or something like that. But our members is something different. Of course, we have some people who has a lot of experience of the nationalist opposition, but most of our members are like regular middle-class Swedes with families, a lot of business people. I am really intrigued by this because this is not a usual crowd that joins our organizations. And I think we also, from the beginning, we did not want to be pessimistic or negative. We want to be creative and positive and talk about the possibilities, and there is a lot of
That's essential, isn't it? That is such a, and you see, this is something that I think nationalism has lacked forever, really. I mean, it's always been moaning about the situation, how bad it is, and this group or that group who are attacking us. I think that something that has been realized in the last few years, it really very recently, in the last 5 years, is that it's far better for everyone to have a more, you know, positive, optimistic attitude, not just for the in terms of success, but also just for in terms of our own mental health. You know, it's better for us to be talking about what we could achieve, what could happen, rather than endlessly going on about how bad our societies are, which is I think that's a tendency that comes with right-wing people. I think that right-wing people are, well, mind you, left-wingers have their own pessimism as well, but I just think certainly within the nationalist sphere, we have been consumed with pessimism and defeatism for far too long. And I think that it's unattractive. It's unattractive to well-balanced people on the outside, so that repels them, you know? So, and what that means, of course, is that the people who end up being attracted to nationalism are not the most well-balanced people a lot of the time. And I think that what you're talking about here is that by projecting a more positive attitude, you've attracted people who are, you know, more well-balanced, more happy, contented people.
I think so. And I mean, of course, when we launched the organization, I read a few forums. I stopped doing that after a few days because there's only negativity and shit talking. But I could see it everywhere. This is not possible. They will never be able to raise that much money. They will never be able to buy the house. They will never be able to keep the house safe from Antifa, or from the government, or from whatever, aliens maybe, I don't know. But we have proven time after time that we set up goals and we achieve them. And I don't know, as I said, I don't read these kind of forums anymore because they make you depressed. So I don't know what they are saying right now, but I don't know. Instead, I just do my thing and make sure that we achieve our goals and let the results talk instead of just talking.
Yeah. Kidu, are there any questions you'd like to ask at this point?
Well, kind of a question, kind of a statement. I was very pleasantly surprised to hear that it's middle class, average Swedes who are really donating to this. And I guess from my point of view, it does make sense because these, you know, nationalist groups, parties, you know, things that you've been involved in that, you know, I've observed but never been directly involved in, your average middle class Swede doesn't want really anything to do with that. You know, most Swedes, despite all the situation in the country, are still quintessentially Swedish. And I think just having an organization that's about Swedes for Swedes is a lot different than a active political party. I think that distinction is extremely important for middle class people. You know, they don't have to vote for it. They don't have to march for it. They just contribute, and they can go and they can hang out and relax, and it's not this politically savaged type of group. I think most Swedes are just kind of sick of that in a society that's oversaturated with politics.
Right, and it's also that being a member of our organization, I mean, we have no problem if everything you do for the organization is to pay your membership fee. We won't ever say that you're a bad member if you're also not an activist or you have to do this and that. I mean, most of our members, they are paying their membership fee and they go to work or they start a business and they raise a family. And I mean, raising a family and maybe starting a business is maybe the most important thing you can do as a nationalist. If we want to ever become anything else than just whiners and complainers. So then we always have the 5% or so of the members that want to do more, that want to be active in some way. And we are not a street activism organization. We will never have demonstrations. I cannot promise that. You never know what happens, but it's not in the plans for now. Instead, we try to build these networks of people. We bring, for example, business people together. We bring families together and we give them an alternative. We have events every weekend right now all around Sweden. And when the house opens, we will also have events every weekend in the house. And so that you can take your family to something Swedish and nationalist without it being really political, but you know that there will be no political correctness or leftism there. Instead of you having to go to the playground or the amusement park where you will be brainwashed with stupid things. So we try to build alternatives for everything that normal Swedes want in their everyday life, but without political correctness and with a sense of Swedishness.
Are there types of, do you do any vetting of the people who get involved? Are there types of people that you don't want getting involved in it?
Well, to become a member is really easy, and we don't vet people on, before they can become a member, because you do that everything online, and within 1 minute you have access to the members area of the homepage and so on. But of course, there are people who, if they don't believe in our ideas and if they cannot follow our statutes, which are not that complicated really, if they behave in such a way that it could hurt the organization, then we would expel them. So far that haven't really been a problem. But we will see in the future. But we try to be open for all Swedes who can, who agree with our ideas.
Right. And okay. Excellent. It seems to me that I wonder about this, what we were saying earlier about sort of middle-class Swedes, and Kuda made the point that the middle-class often never really want to get involved in something that's overtly right-wing political. They're happy to get involved with something that's left-wing political, take their kid to a feminist march or something like that. But they don't want to be associated with the right-wing politics side of things. But what you're doing is not overtly political. It's much more cultural. It's much more of a lifestyle sort of thing, or at least that's how it's manifesting just now. And I wonder, but it's also spiritual, isn't it? I mean, you're talking about actually healing damage and building a future, a very long-term future for people. So it's not like this is something shallow. I wouldn't want to suggest that. The question that I'm working my way towards asking, do you think that ordinary people can be easily persuaded to be part of something like this because you're offering them an alternative that seems healthier than the mainstream? In other words, I'm thinking of some young Swedish woman who, at some level, wants to become a mother one day, but she can't articulate that. Because the mainstream tells her, you should be concerned with career and all this. But you're giving them something else. You're sort of giving her a way to become a mother. Is that, would you say that sort of thing happens?
I sure hope so. Of course, it's still some kind of stigma around being involved in anything nationalistic. But it's going away. I would say also with the populist party, Sweden Democrats, who are now in the Swedish parliament with about 18% of the votes, things have started to change because the media has been calling them Nazis for 20 years. And now every fifth Swede, or maybe, I don't know, also counting the immigrants, but every fifth person in Sweden is voting for them. And so it's starting to change. And I mean, we also try to, because the reality is that people will not join your organization before they see that they will get something from it. It's always been for nationalists that they say, this is what we demand from you. This is what we demand from you. This is what we demand from you. You should give your money, your time. You should go public. And if you lose your job, it's who cares? You know, the revolution will come anyway, and so on. I have seen a lot of young people who has gathered such debts because they've taken credits and loans to work full-time with nationalism without a salary, and then they have problems for life. But we try to turn it around. So, okay, if you become a member of the Fria Sverige, what will you get out of it? And we could be idealistic and say that it shouldn't be like this. You know, everybody should see a bigger picture. This is the truth, and this is how humans work. And we tell people that we will give you an alternative to the mainstream society. We will not ask that you become a street activist if you don't want to. We'll not ask that you come and listen to 8-hour lectures about ideology or philosophy if you don't want to. We will have that as well. But if you just want to come, have a coffee, bring your kids to the playground, and hang around nice Swedish people, that's okay. And we will give you that alternative. You know that you, when you come to our areas, there will only be Swedes, maybe some foreign guests, but they are sympathetic to our cause. And this will enrich your lives instead of draining it.
Right. And what you've just said raises another question, which is, how do you get away with doing this? Because I think that in Britain or America, such an organization would be illegal to create an organization that was only open to white people. So how do you, I mean, what's the situation there with this?
Well, we can't really officially deny people based on race a membership, at least not if we want to keep our tax status. So if somebody who is not Swedish for some reason wants to become a member and pay the membership fee, they can do that. But we are allowed to have rules for the house. And we also have a two-tier membership. So we have everybody can come become a supporting member, and then you have a higher tier with this, which is an active membership, as we call it. And then we have some other standards, and then it's not a problem with the law.
Right, I see. Another question then, do you advertise it? And if so, how?
We do, we try. This is also a thing that from the beginning, we did not want to do the same mistakes as other nationalists have made and, you know, put ourselves in the same corner as criminal organizations by being secret, by being, something like that. So we try to promote our organization in the same way a business or another organization would do, with Facebook ads. Google ads. We also, of course, spread leaflets and stickers and all of this old school street activism. But we try to use all the means that any other organization would use. Instead of always thinking that no, we can't do that because they will stop us, or so, then we just approach it by thinking, of course, we should have the same rights as everyone else, so we will promote our organization the same way as everyone else does. But I think our main recruitment tool is our online media presence. We have a daily radio show, which is then launched as a podcast, and which until 2 weeks ago also was live on YouTube every day, but we were deplatformed 2 weeks ago. So we're not.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
that was expected. And I mean, also like this, we don't want to cry about it. It's like it is. We find another alternative, just have to carry on. And then, of course, the online newspaper, which also has around 1,000 paying subscribers, which make sure that two people can work full time with our media. And this together, I think, brings most of the new people into the organization.
Right, okay. Could you check the text chat on the right-hand side? And another question that sort of links to what you just said, how much opposition have you got from the mainstream? How much have they objected to it? And that question first.
Well, it was when we launched, it was pretty silent. We had the Swedish, there's a magazine called Expo, which is like Searchlight in the UK. They wrote about it, of course, but it was pretty silent in the mainstream media. But when we bought the first house, then the media started writing about it. And but I have to say, it was pretty fair. Of course, they have their own angle, and it's like, this will be the white nationalist headquarter, and they talk to like some local immigrants in the neighborhood, like, how are you afraid, and so on. But the radio, the state radio, they called me, they interviewed me, and it was just edited a bit funny, like as always. But you know, at least they called me, and that's more than they usually do when they write about me or any projects I'm involved in. So it hasn't been that bad. And the funny thing is, when the media wrote about it, we just in a few days we had like 50 new members from the area where we bought the house. So it was like perfect advertisement for us.
That's great. Congratulations. And what about the state? Has the state tried to obstruct this project yet?
Not really. We haven't noticed anything. The organization is registered, and we try to keep all papers in order to not give them any excuses to stop us. And so far, we haven't really heard or seen anything. But I think it's also because, as I said, we don't want to hide, and we've always been open with everything that we do. We try to be 100% transparent. We say how many members we have. Our bookkeeping is transparent to our members, and we tell everybody the address to our house. We have a lot of people who are public with their face and name and so on. And we also said that, for example, when it was official where we bought the house, I called the local parliament or the person in charge of security for this area, for the county, because he had been interviewed in the newspaper. And I said, hello, just so you know, this is my phone number and my email. If you have any questions, just ask me. You're trying to be always be transparent and be there. You know, also, if the police would like to come by and look inside the house, okay, come in. We're not doing anything illegal. We won't do anything stupid. So why should we hide, and why should we act like criminals?
Yes, that's part of it. That's a big danger, isn't it? That you, at some level, you believe, well, maybe we are criminals in some way. You sort of fall into that mode of thinking, which, I mean, you're not, so that's an irrational thing. But I think it does happen. I think it does happen to us quite a lot, that they manage to sort of gaslight you into thinking that you're doing something wrong, into feeling that you're, you know, breaking with the rules of your society in some way, which then, you know, leads to self-destructive behavior. So Kudu, you wanted to ask some questions.
Yeah, so I've just been reading the chat. Of course, I keep quite good track of that here with the streams. And a couple of the chatters they just had some questions about Swedish politics in general, if you're comfortable answering one or two.
Of course, no problem.
So I only saw one person mention it, but I think it's interesting for viewers to know that Sweden, after the election in September, still doesn't have a new government. We're still trying to get that government in, and we only get two votes left in the parliament before another election happens. So do you have any views on that? Do you think we're going to end up having another election?
Well, they tried to make a coalition now between center-right and center-left, which didn't work out. And nobody wants to cooperate with the Sweden Democrats. So the center-right cannot have their own majority. The center-left can't have their own majority. The Sweden Democrats and the former Communist Party are on two different ends, and nobody wants or at least the center right don't want anything to do with the Communist Party. The Social Democrats have no problem working with them. So I don't know. I don't believe that we will have a new election, because first of all, that has never happened in Swedish history. And I have a feeling that somehow they will make a center-left, center-right coalition anyway between the two major parties and a few of the smaller ones. I said like 1 or 2 years ago that Annie Lööf, the leader of the center party, which I think they got about 8% in the last election, that I think she will become the prime minister. And the reason for that is that then the Social Democrats can work together with them and say, look, we have now our first female prime minister, and we are feminists, so that's, of course, a good thing. And then maybe they could work together with Moderaterna, which is the conservative or center-right party, and put this Annie Lööf forward. And I still believe that can happen, even though they already tried it and it didn't work out. It's complicated. It's like a big sandbox, and nobody wants to play with the blue and yellow kid in the corner.
That's good. So part of the reason I asked the question is, you know, Swedish people, middle class people, get, you know, they get sick of politics. I think a lot of Swedes are sick of politics because it permeates every part of the culture of the country. So part of my asking this question was, do you think that with all the instability and uncertainty that comes from the government and the parliament, that it will push more people toward Det Fria Sverige, because it's more social from what you've described, and, you know, people can be engaged in something that's just purely Swedish, and they don't have to worry about everything that's going on beyond the meeting house.
Mm. I think so, and we could see it already after the election, that an increase in new members, because many Swedish nationalists or immigration skeptics were disillusioned by the election results. We were many who believed that the Sweden Democrats would become the largest or second largest party, and that the more radical alternative for Sweden, that they would get at least between 1 and 3%. Some people even believe that they would get above 4% and get into the parliament. But instead, the Sweden Democrats just only became the third largest party, and the alternative for Sweden received like 0.3% of the votes or something like that. And I think many Swedes who have to see the problems, they are looking for alternative solutions right now. And we try to deliver an alternative solution. But I want to stress that I still believe that people who want to do party politics should do that. I don't think that we should, you know, give up on the parliamentary arena. I think that's still important. I also believe that the Fria Sverige, you know, we are not the sole solution to all the problems. I think we are part of a larger puzzle of different people and different organizations and initiatives. I believe you can be active in a party and also be a part of the Fria Sverige, which we see today. We have members both in the Sweden Democrats and in the Alternative for Sweden. But I think for the normal middle class Swede, they are starting to lose hope in the political process. Our objective here and our duty is to make sure that they don't go into this negative spiral of pessimism and defeatism. Instead, that's why we really want to show this alternative. Like, you know, there is something else. It's not like if we don't win the election, everything is over. On the contrary, it's like we are building something else here. Come and be a part of building this future together.
So to what extent do you envisage people being separate from mainstream Swedish society? I mean, what is the sort of end goal? Do you want people to have jobs within Det Fria Sverige? Is it actually going to be, as you said, a parallel society, or will people have jobs in the mainstream still? Will they go to their kids go to mainstream schools, or will there be, you know, schools within this community?
Well, of course, there are a few steps before we can reach like a larger or bigger vision. But in Sweden, still you can open private schools, which still gets funding from the state. It's a bit different. And you can have private kindergartens and stuff like that. And that's, of course, one thing that we want to do. It's also, I mean, it all depends on how many people we are and how dedicated we are. I think in the future we can have an alternative healthcare system. We have we have a few doctors already in our membership. We have teachers. We have already three teachers who have written to us and said, when you start a school, I want to work there. So we will try to really build a parallel society. Of course, today, it's not really possible to, I mean, you can't really avoid taxes if you have a normal job. If you're employed by somebody, then you will have to pay your taxes. But we will hold lectures in tax planning, and I mean, here we in a legal way can contribute as little as possible to the mainstream society. And who knows what is possible in the future? I mean, with cryptocurrency, maybe we can have our own currency within the parallel society. Of course, this could be in 5, 10, or 30 years. I don't know. But I believe all of these things are possible. We have to just put our minds to it. I often talk in the radio show about these greater visions of what we can do in the future. And there are always people who said, nah, the state will stop that. Oh, it will never be possible. I don't believe that. I mean, our people have survived starvation. They have survived wars. They have survived occupation. For some reason, they wandered north to this icy cold climate. We have survived such great things that, I mean, this decadent state of today, I mean, it's nothing. It should be a piece of cake if we just decide to do something else. So I believe that it's still within us, within Swedes and in Europeans in general, to build something strong and lasting. And this is what we want to do with the organization.
Okay. Oh, yeah, it is really just a matter of deciding to do it, isn't it? It's a matter of, well, having the will to do something. Okay, excellent. Well, let's leave it at that, because I think that's a really good introduction to the organization. Just one final question that it must be asked is, how can people get involved, and people from outside Sweden who might want to help, how can they help?
Right. On our homepage, which I guess you can link somewhere, detfriasverige.se, there is some information in English about the organization, and there you can also donate money. If you want to become a member to support it, or if you want to be informed about our upcoming events, you can shoot an email. There's contact us on the page, and I will keep you in the loop. We are thinking about establishing an English newsletter as well, because we have a lot of people around the world who wants to keep up with what is happening in the organization. It's not there right now, but I hope to have it in the beginning of next year. So keep an eye on the homepage, follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all of these places where we will probably be deplatformed someday. Gab, we are also have an account there. And we will keep you in the loop.
Excellent. Okay. Now let's leave it at that. I think that's really good and, you know, brief to the point. So thank you very much, Dan from Det Fria Sverige. And I hope this helps your organization to some extent. And thank you to Kudu for assisting with this hangout. So, excellent. Okay. So I'll be back in about an hour. And I think I can't actually remember who the next guest is, and I accidentally closed my browser, so I can't tell you, but it will be something riveting, no doubt. Okay, so I will, Kudu, do you want to tell me who it is?
It is Defend Europa. Defend
Europa. Oh, it's Defend Europa. Well, yeah, okay, that will be good. Okay, excellent. I'm looking forward to that. So, in the meantime, this was Det Fria Sverige, and thank you very much for appearing on Millennial, and I hope everyone enjoyed this. So, thank you, and I'll see you soon.